Looking for your next thrifting experience? Check out the new Goodwill Columbus location in Westerville. Our new store is full of the latest secondhand selections with options rotating daily. From warm weather clothes to home decor, you may find your new favorite items just in time for spring. Each purchase helps us create opportunities throughout Central Ohio. It's shopping that looks good, feels good, and does good. Come shop at 60 East Schrock Road or learn more at goodwillcolumbus.org.
Yeah, you know what time it is. It's time for the Geekenders podcast. Mega Ran, Jesse and Dodger, what up? Let's go.
Yo, it's the weekend.
Yeah, it's time to geek out.
Let it begin.
Go on stream and shout. It's Jesse and Dodger, so give them a follow and see what the Geekenders are all about.
Yo, it's the weekend.
Yeah, it's time to geek out.
Let it begin.
Go on stream and shout. It's Jesse and Dodger, so give them a follow. Number one geek podcast without a doubt. Yo, another end of another long week. Got a job and a kid, I know that you're all beat. So take a second, grab a drink and vibe while we catch you up in just a matter of time. On gaming, comics, whatever you're doing. If you're nerdy like us, then you know you should tune in. Thank you for sharing our world with us. Now follow, subscribe, and turn this up.
Yo, it's the weekend.
Yeah, it's time to geek out.
Let it begin.
Go on, scream and shout. It's Jesse and Dodger, so give them a follow. Number one geek podcast without a doubt.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Geekenders. It is August the 21st, and I have a very sleepy boy with me today.
Hi, it's me, I'm a sleepy boy.
He's a sleepy boy, but he's visiting us from America. He's staying with us right now, which is why he's in my sweet love Sam's office. Some of you might recognize if you watch Sam's streams.
Yeah, I'm squatting, but they've been kind enough to give me a place to stay and to sleep. And as a sleepy boy, I've been enjoying it a lot. So thanks for having me.
Of course, in my home and on the show. Thank you for being here.
Yeah,
I was gonna default and be like, so how are you doing? But I've been with you all day. So
yeah, you know pretty well. We were watching the Mr. Bread show.
We showed you a like decently good show and then followed it up with like a buck wild weird show.
With slop.
Yes.
I don't know if it's quite slop. It's kind of slop. It's kid slop.
It is kid slop 100%. Yeah, we showed you Making Fun, which is a show that was only around for one season. It's only 8 episodes, but it's just like a bunch of like grumpy old men who all know how to build stuff, and little kids ask them to build things for them, and then they do it. Yeah, and it's cute.
It's wholesome and it's creative and educational, and yeah. I loved it. I love that show. I'm so sad that there's only one season.
I know. We were looking up why it got taken down because we kept being like, this show, they really do take the time to like have fun with it and make sure that they're explaining why they're doing things a certain way. So it is like they do teach you, you know, why they're choosing to build things the way that they're building them. But one of the like the conceit of the show is that the main guy doesn't like kids. And so he's like kind of aggro with the kids and they're aggro back. And I guess it got a lot of flack for that.
I read it as like, oh, they're treating each other as like, you know, peers.
Right.
Like, or like with this level of respect where, you know, you can push back on an idea and they'll like tease you for something. And likewise, the kids are like pushing back on them for being old men. And they're like teasing them for that. And it felt, at least it's edited in a way that it feels like a fun dynamic. But I could totally see how some of those comments, like as the parents looking at that, I'm like, don't talk to my kid that way.
Totally. So is that, and then also, I guess they got a lot of flack for doing goofs in a way that was not safe because a lot of the show revolves around using power tools, saws, all kinds of like dangerous equipment. And they were like, sometimes they do a goof, but they're not wearing the right glasses, or like there was a whole sequence where they had the lathe going and they were lathing down some wood. And one of the guys had glasses on, but as a goof had his mouth open. So all of the wood was going into his mouth.
Yeah, chips were like going in his mouth. And they make a joke about him doing that as if it's like a thing that you do. And I don't think the kids. Yeah, that's fair. I think it's fair to criticize the show for that. But
sure,
I don't know. Being a bit of a grump to random kids, I feel like that's just realistic day to day life.
Sure. Yeah. So that show is cute. And then we were like, "Have you seen Bread's Barbershop?" Which I've talked about before.
Oh, you have? This has been a theme for you.
So every April Fool's is normally on my channel. I normally have like a day that has a theme. I try not to do like a mean-spirited goof of any kind. It's just like we'll just choose like a weird theme based around something I've talked about. And one year we made it so that my Discord and my channel turned into a Wilk fan page.
Wow, that's so niche.
So we have a ton of Wilk emotes still.
Really? I didn't know this.
Yeah, it's a mess.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see Wilk being a favorite. I feel like out of all the characters, he has the least reprehensible, the least like grating of a
personality.
Yeah, like every episode, I feel like I'm getting my ankles broken with the way they're like having completely different motivations or stylistically what their goals are. Yes. But Wilk seems pretty consistently trying to be fighting for good and also a coward.
Yeah, it's kind of like what we were saying. We were talking about whether or not there's a moral to any of these episodes, and there really isn't. But like some of the Wilk themed episodes, Wilk has a moment where it's like, it's okay to be myself, you know?
Yeah. If anyone like, is a moral sort of character, thing. It's probably Wilk.
It's only Wilk. Yeah. Everybody else is just nonsense.
Yeah. And it really does feel like they're just retreading SpongeBob. They're just retelling SpongeBob again. Cause
Mr. Bread being
greedy, but like, you know, but without
like a through line.
like
an episode ends and you're like, but nothing was solved, but they didn't fix anything.
It's like short form SpongeBob. It's like TikTok SpongeBob. Like they're just throwing out like all these moments at you in kind of a rapid fire. You recognize this like kind of way. And then none of it pays off. And the episode just ends. And then they drop all those plot lines in the next one. And it's it's odd. I mean, it's made me really appreciate, I guess, how good SpongeBob is as a show. With what they're able to do with those episodes.
I've watched a couple of episodes of SpongeBob because I hadn't watched it really since I was a kid. I watched a couple of episodes of SpongeBob recently with my kid. And I was like, you know what? There's a reason that this show has been around for so long and is so popular even now, you know.
I think it's probably like the characters are so well defined that every episode they're consistently them. They never really act so out of character that it breaks the world for you. And so you're able to see them in different situations and scenarios, but it's like endlessly repeatable and kind of safe because you always know, oh, SpongeBob's going to react this way. Patrick's going to be kind of dumb and lazy. Squidward's going to be conniving and a grump. And then whenever they have in that episode a chance to like grow, you know, that it hits better because we know so clearly where they're starting from. But in this Bread show, it could like everyone's starting from like a zero at on every episode, or like maybe they start at 100. They're starting off and they're like already really crazy about something, and then we're trying to catch up to where they are, and then it's over.
And then it's just done. The very first episode that he watched was like a Master Bread backstory where he was asked at the very start of the episode, Master Bread, have you ever been in love? And he was like, well, I was once. And they do like a flashback weird like high school anime style thing where he's thinking about when a sushi girl showed up to school and he was nice to her and it turned out that she was a princess. And that was the end.
Yeah, and it cuts back to modern day. And they're like, and did you ever meet her again? And he was like, no.
Nope.
And then
just ends the episode.
And
so funny.
I was like, maybe they're setting up for something in the future. Nope, none of that. It'll never be brought up again.
No,
it's surreal. It's a surreal show.
It's wild. And I do think It must have been last season. I do think that the season where they were like, each episode is going to end with us telling you something about it, like choosing a type of food and telling you the history of it. I thought those were the best parts of the episodes. And now that's not even there. It's just like a weird short story that maybe makes sense. An opening theme that has nothing to do with the show and an ending theme that has nothing to do with the show. Yeah. And then you rinse, repeat.
They're like disco dancing at the ending. Yeah. Always. And oh, and in each episode, they're like eating food, which is composed of the food that they all are. But the food they're eating is non-sentient, and they never address the difference, or like the world doesn't make sense and is broken. At least like with SpongeBob, there's like some world building or like elements of, you know, trying to ground kind of like, oh, we can't breathe air because we're, you know, sea sponges. And it's like, oh, okay, this makes sense. And then there's a whole episode of them. Oh, we're in Sandy's bubble and now we have to breathe air and it's really bad. And it's like, oh, I get it. I understand the continuity. But in this, it's like, there's none of that. There's none of that.
It's just gone.
Is that like, I don't know, maybe, am I getting too heady about like, is this the type of shows that the new, like, youngest generations are growing up with? Is that changing their, like, expectations for media or for storytelling? Or
I honestly think it's just, I think every, as TV develops or, like, visual media develops, there's always going to be people who are doing it in, like, a really smart, interesting way. And there's going to be people that are doing it in a buck wild, weird, stupid way, you know?
I don't think that too.
Yeah. I don't think that Bread's Barbershop is like evident of, you know, kids' attention spans not appreciating storylines or, you know, anything like that. I do think it's hilarious that that show's been around for four seasons.
Yeah.
But like, no, I mean, we had dumbass shows for sure.
Yeah,
we had dumbass Nickelodeon shows that were like, you know, 10 minute commercial interval weird things. And we were like, yay. You know? Yeah,
that's true. I guess you can't take any one show and extrapolate it to be like, you know, oh, this is what's wrong with this generation sort of thing.
Right.
But yeah, it is. I think it's because so many of the skits and like the moments seem like they're lifted straight from like a TikTok. In terms of like what they're like trying to be short form. And so I'm just wondering if that is like just kind of how shows are written now at a certain level. Are they all trying to be like clippable, small, shareable moments?
I did see a thing, and I don't know if this is true because I didn't follow up on the information, but somebody was saying that a lot of shows now are being designed to have all of the action happen in the center so that it can also be on a vertical. So they wanted to like either clip it or put it on a device and have it be vertical, then they could do that easily without having to like futz with it too much. I do think that the ways that things are being shot and filmed and designed are absolutely evident of how we ingest it, for sure.
The other thing I was noticing is like all the characters had kind of three canned emotional responses to things. It was like angry, top of the face turns red, they're stomping the same way every time, they're yelling, nervous, it's like sweat beads everywhere, it's you know. And then there's like pleading or happy, where it's like just kind of big welling up eyes and neutral kind of face. But like seeing them all cycle between these three emotions, like every character on the show had these same three poses. And I was like, I don't know, are these like just emojis that are being kind of applied to each of them? Or
I mean, it is like a CGI show, right? So like, so maybe they're like, okay, and now we have him do the, oh no, you know, and dub in whatever we want. And then he does the, oh, I'm so mad. And we dub in whatever we want. And yeah, they probably just recycle animations on the same.
It's easy for production. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't fault that.
Surprise me.
it's just a surreal thing to watch the same four, like emotions recycled for every character over and over again.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, yeah. Thanks for showing me that show.
So you are something to think about. So welcome. And I'm sure it was even more fun while half awake.
Yeah. No, it was very kind of dreamlike state to to kind of like open my eyes for a moment and see this talking bread, like with his parted hair and his red screaming face. Yeah, I'm going to be thinking about that for a while.
It was kind of like there was a gas leak in my living room because I would walk in and Clark would be splayed out on the ground with blankets all over the place. And you were kind of laid out on the couch like just a concerned look on your face with your eyes half open. Like, oh, no. What have I done? I never should have put this on.
Yeah, I enjoyed watching it for what it's worth.
Thanks. I'm glad. Yeah, I don't know what all you can say about what you've been doing in England so far or like why you're out here, but we tend to see you every summer-ish.
Yeah. Yeah, I like to visit you guys and I have other family and friends in the UK. So whenever I have an opportunity to go to Europe, I'll definitely stop by here and hang out for a bit and visit people. So that's what I'm doing right now. I the opportunity I had was to visit a game studio that was based in London. I'm under NDA for like what we did while there, but it was a cool opportunity where I was able to like talk with the devs, see their new game, and give feedback, which is like a thing that I love doing. I love when there's like a genuine moment of, hey, we're working on this. Is this a good idea or bad idea? Like, please, let's talk through it. And when they're, you know, there's an earnest want for having a dialogue about something. Yeah, I love doing that. So I got to do that. And then now I'm visiting you guys and I'm going to visit Joe and I got my cousin lives out here. So I'm going to be
busy
bopping around. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that your feedback with a game has a bit more value because you play a lot of them, but you also like went to school for development, right? So
yeah,
you have some insight that way.
I definitely have a sense of like if there's a feature being requested that I know is unreasonable, I like won't I won't request that.
Yeah.
But it's really nice to see kind of different studios' approaches to game development because it's such a messy and complicated art to see how every studio is run and kind of what their priorities are and how they you know facilitate the experience is really interesting. And then yeah, getting to talk like one-on-one with the devs, and I've noticed the game dev world in the UK especially is so small. Like every dev out here has worked for like four of the major studios that are also based out here.
Yeah.
And have, like they know they have stories from everything. So I got to hear a bunch of tea about some of the other studios out here, which I enjoyed, and I won't be repeating because I don't think I'm supposed to. But yeah, I feel like I've been enriched from this trip already. So
that's good. Are you? I know we talked about this off camera a little bit, but are you like working on developing anything that you feel comfortable talking about, or like?
There's two different projects that I'm working on right now. One that's a little more front facing and would be like a part of my show and like a consistent like feature kind of that would be thing I can play off of that's kind of in the same realm as what I've done with Timmy, which is like a little co-pilot, you know, AI bot that has been built to listen to everything I'm saying and then respond to me in a voice that was distilled from both my voice and Charborg's voice. We combined the two voices and then pitched it up, and then now it sounds like this weird amalgamous southern baby, and so that's where Timmy's voice came from, and so we have that as like a character on the show. And so I have another thing that's in that same similar vein that's hopefully coming out soon. And then other than that, there's one that I'm working on that's more on the back end, and this is a tool that the whole goal is gather data from each live stream around like chat activity, like every time anyone's typing, what they're saying, and kind of weight different messages around what the messages entail. Like an emote would have like certain weights to it, certain phrases would have weights to it, but things like, you know, funny, hype, scary, angry, whatever it might be. Like, you get a different kind of emotional profile from how the chat room is interacting with the stream, and then you grade that on like a timeline of the entire stream. And so it's kind of a system that we're building that will allow you to basically hop around in a stream and find these kind of spikes where the sentiments were, you know, higher than average at any specific moment in the stream, and then even auto generate clips from that and be able to be like, okay, funny moments, what are the funniest moments that have been derived from the chat engagement this stream, and then auto export that out.
Oh, interesting. Right.
And you could be like, this is the highlight reel from like this last stream, or, you know, previously on, and you can like have like a little display of that. So we've been working on that for a while. It's still kind of not quite done, but there's other applications for that too, outside of just clips. But I think it would make like editing really easier to get like from a VOD.
Yeah.
And also just a really fun way of looking at, I guess, making, because there's so much content you produce as a live streamer. You're just constantly talking or live doing something. And then most of that, after it's done live, just kind of goes into the kind of void of the internet where it just kind of sits there forever or vanishes, right? And I feel like there's so much more you could do with that VOD. And so part of this is the goal of how can you find the value in things like what the chat is doing while you're streaming, and have that data, like, I don't know. I'm sleepy and I'm not really making the best the best sense with it, but it's a thing that I think will be a really cool tool and allow for us to kind of rethink how we stream in general. And so I'm excited for that. But
I've seen programs that are like, if you upload a stream, then we can generate highlights for you, or we can generate potential clips, but it's never clear like what they're basing any of that on or like how they're doing it. Yeah. So I like that with the system that you guys are trying to make it, you could just be like, I want to know what parts people found the funniest, or, you know, when chat was quietest, like why. I think you're right. It would, like, even just looking at that information would sort of encourage you to be more mindful of what's happening in chat. It might increase like people's interest in engaging more. And
yeah. Especially if they feel that what they're saying is having an effect on this system, right? Like, if we're posting this emote when something good happens, the bot, you know, that's scraping all of this is going to be able to like determine that this is useful, or like that this was a good moment. Another thing that the systems would do is do like a voice to text transcription of everything said on the stream. And so the vision I have there is like, imagine doing like control F, but it's for your own stream. And it's like every time I say the word like but, and it's like, okay, I want a highlight reel of every time that but is said. And so you have like an auto-generated like clip now of all the buts that you've said in the entire stream.
Right.
And so, yeah, just, I don't know. But I think,
For example. Yeah.
But yeah, I think you could, there you go. But again, there's a lot you could do with understanding the context behind things. And that's kind of what the goal is it's like a context engine, like using, giving you the tools to contextually pick apart your own stream after the fact.
Yeah, I could see people also making sure that they have specific types of emotes to help with that as well.
Exactly. And that's part of the waiting process, is like, currently we're not using any AI for that. It's all just a hand done thing for your own community, where you're like, I think this is worth a weight of like 1.0. Maybe this emote is like worth a weight of 2.0. This one's worth like 0.3. And you can like kind of weight each one of your own emotes or a global emote into different categories, and then use that as like the way it's determining all the metrics.
Interesting. So I could like take an emote and say, this is meant to be like a more extreme like reaction, and almost like tag it in a way.
Yeah.
Like an extreme reaction, which is like funny, hilarious, whatever.
Exactly. yeah, you'd be like, Lull maybe is like 1.0 in the funny category, and like Omega Lull is like 1.5. And then it's like, yeah, I don't know, Omega freaking LOL is like 3. It's like, oh, if anyone's using that, then like that, they're laughing big. Like,
right, you know. Right. That's it right there.
It would have some like training kind of process, I think, for your community to kind of adapt this kind of different weighting system themselves. But I think it it also just, like you said, it encourages like more engaged chat participation where they feel like they're actually being listened to, and what they're saying is going to have like an effect on the highlight reel that comes afterwards, or the previously on. Because, you know, if you're streaming part 5 of a series and people miss part 1 through 4, you know, being able to have a previously on for each of those parts that you can show before part 5 and have like just cool. Catching you up on kind of some highlights of what had happened last time, I think would be a really nice way of getting people to feel better about jumping in, you know, midway through.
Yeah.
So,
or next time that Wilk just naturally comes up on stream, I can be like, here are all of the moments when I've ever talked about Wilk.
Control F Wilk.
F Wilk.
Yeah. Exactly.
Horrendous. Well, while you've been jet setting, have you been playing much aside from what you played while you were in London? Or reading anything, or really whatever?
I am trying to start reading again. I feel like reading is such a great way of like getting your brain to settle down. Until now, my like settle down brain activity was always TFT, where I'd play it in bed before sleeping.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's good for the
brain.
Does
that settle you down?
kind of. I don't know. Unless it was like a really frustrating game, then I always play another and it ends up way too late. But I'm like, I wanted to start reading again. So I have been reading like a Murakami book, which is like a Japanese author that I read his book, Norwegian Wood, several years ago. And I loved it. It's like kind of pensive, like funny, but like dark and really like kind of a coming of age story. And I wanted to read his other stuff. So I'm reading like short stories by him right now. And those have all been thought-provoking, but a little more on the depressing side than I hadn't thought when I got the book. So I'm probably going to swap to reading A Knight's Tale,
the Knight of the Seven Kingdoms stories.
Yes, Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. Yes,
we talked
about
that in the car.
I brought that, so I'm going to read that, I think, on this trip.
Yeah, is like, what is, just to go back really quick, what is Murakami's style? Is it like really prosy? Is it like,
yeah, I'd say it's prosy, very descriptive, very like kind of pontificate-y, like very like lost in thought, going on a tangent for a long time. And very it kind of reminds me of like Catcher in the Rye in terms of like how the character has the internal monologue and how they're just kind of accepting everything that's happening to them in almost like a shrug, kind of blasé way, but is that then have incredibly complicated and pained like thoughts about everything that's happening. So in some ways I liked reading his style because I can relate to that on a personal level. That's like how my brain works. So I'm like, I guess it's good to see it from another perspective. But this most recent read, it was like a little too on the nose where I was like,
I got
now they're just talking about things that like I have existential crisis about all the time. I'm like, I don't really need to read more about this. So yeah, maybe some fantasy is in the books.
I always get nervous when if somebody recommends a book to me and then they're like, yeah, but like halfway through, I had to just kind of stop reading for a while. That makes me so nervous, man.
Yeah.
And it's not like I haven't read things that have made me feel that way and I still would recommend them. But like, it makes me wonder, like, what that's going to do to me. Am I going to be thinking about the specific thing I read for like a month, you know?
like chewing it over before you're ready to keep going.
Yeah. Like when we used to do Manga Pod, we read a lot of Berserk. For anybody who has read Berserk, it is very dark. And there are specific panels from Berserk that I still think about. And I remember there was one time when we were reading it and I fully had to just like not read it for a while. Like, I needed to get it done in the next few days so that we could do our podcast. But I was like, I can't read this for a couple of days, I don't think, you know? Yeah. And that, like, I think it's good to be affected by art.
Yeah.
But at the same time, sometimes I really wish I could control, like, how often I'm thinking about something that, like, messed with me. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's how I felt reading Murakami the first time too, where I felt so moved by it, but it was also the type of moved where I couldn't stop thinking about it for a while, and I had to, like, I almost felt like I was mourning the character's arc, and I was like, eventually I was like, I got enough in my life that I gotta mourn. I don't know if I need like another weight on top of that.
Yeah, I gotta let this pass.
Yeah, I liked Annihilation a lot, which is the book about. Do you ever watch that movie Annihilation?
It's like a sci-fi. I can't remember, to be honest.
It's a pretty unique one.
What's the summary?
There's a zone on Earth that started developing where everything inside it is rapidly mutating, as if evolution was sped up, you know, a million times over.
I don't think I have. So, I don't really think I've seen that.
It's a cool movie to watch. It's scary, but it's cool. And the book, I think, is even better in the way, you know, you're following this kind of character who goes on an expedition into this zone, and it's all from their perspective. It's their journal. That's like kind of their command journal. And as you can imagine, if you're reading the perspective of someone who, while they're here, their cells are rapidly mutating or evolving, the perspective of the character and like the style it's written in itself is like changing over the course of the book. And so,
how cool.
It's a really, yeah, and it's one of those things you almost don't notice until you look back and you're like, oh, this has been slowly changing until I didn't even like recognize it.
Right.
So yeah, I think that's worth a read for sure. If you like, you know, sci-fi or cosmic horror or anything like that, then
yeah. I've been trying to figure out what I should do after I'm done with Project Hail Mary. I have enjoyed that Project Hail Mary is like, I was talking with somebody else and I called it sci-fi hopecore. Yeah. You know, because a lot of really good sci-fi is also depressing as fuck. Yeah. You know? But I feel like after this, I could hop into a horrifying thing, maybe.
I would say Annihilation, you could look at it as depressing, but I saw it more as like mind expanding. Like your definitions of good and bad are evolved and kind of twisted over the course of this story because of the effects of this zone. And by the end, you're like, I can't say if this was good or bad. Like, you know, maybe
right.
You're like the whole adventure, the journey is like one that changes your definitions of right and wrong, even. Like, it's a really interesting read. So if you like the sci-fi stuff, then I'd say it's worth a read.
Do you tend to be fine with stories like that where at the end you're like, I don't know, nothing got wrapped up like necessarily.
Resolved, yeah,
nothing was tied up with a bow. I'm fine with that for the most part. It's really rare for me to, I know that we just talked about Bread Barbershop and complained about how every episode of Bread Barbershop does not have an ending that makes any fucking sense. But like, I think if something is written really well, I'm okay with the end being like, and who knows what happens next.
Yeah.
That's the end of the story I'm going to write, you know.
I am as well. I think especially if part of the point is interpretation and for you to like to make your own conclusions. Like if a story is set up where that is the payoff, then I think that's absolutely warranted. There are some I feel like where that's not earned. And if they just drop it and they don't give it a good ending, then that's less satisfying. But if they earn it, then it's absolutely fine, I think, if it is left, you know, open-ended.
You know what I'm over? I'm not saying that nobody can ever do it again. But, like, I don't need any more The Cycle Continues stories for a while, I don't think.
The Cycle Continues? I mean, but, like, where
when the
beginning?
Yes, when at the end it's like, oh, all of that work that we did doesn't matter because it's just part of the cycle and it's all starting over again. I could do without some of those for a while.
You know, that reminds me of this one Bread Barbershop episode that I watched about 30 minutes ago. Where I think you weren't in the room for this one, so this might be
maybe Bread Barbershop is art.
Yeah,
sorry, keep going.
The queen of the land wants more money, and so she decides to impose taxes on everyone for everything. Right. And then a montage plays out where everyone is taxed for walking to work, for being single, for being in a relationship, for singing, for falling over. You know, everyone's taxed, and the people aren't happy about this. We then cut back to the queen, and she's swimming in money, and she goes, "I can't wait to spend this money." But guess what? She can't spend it on anything because all the people are taxed for doing anything. So there's nothing left for them to do because they'll be taxed if they do it. And so she then has a whole montage of her trying to buy things and not being able to and having a really terrible time. And then eventually at the end of the episode, after a painful, you know, 12 minutes or whatever, she says, "You know what? No more taxes. Let's all go back to how it was." And everyone celebrates. And the cycle continues, I think, is the moral of that story.
Sure. And then she spends all the money on stuff, and then
we're back.
She's gonna want money again eventually. Yeah. Dang, that's deep.
Yeah. That's my least favorite episode that we watched, the bread one. So I think you might be onto something with the cycle thing. I did not think that was earned.
Yeah. It feels now, it's kind of like if I'm playing a game and it starts to get a little too fourth wall breaky, if it feels like it's looking at me too much, I'm like, all right, who in this game isn't real, or what are you going to do to my computer? I've gotten a little, I don't know what the word would be, but it's hard. Once, if you see enough indicators for a thing about to happen, sometimes it's hard to just like live in the story anymore. And if I get to the end of a story and it feels like it's setting up but you killed the queen, but look, a new queen has taken her place.
Yeah. And this one's just as bad. Maybe worse even.
And this one, or even better, you killed the queen, but now you're the queen, right? Like, dude. No more cycle continue stories for a while. That's all.
I see. Okay. I'll keep that in mind. For Annihilation's sake, it is a part of a trilogy. So if you wanted more, there are two other books. I read some of the second book and it didn't hit for me the same way. So I kind of stopped.
That's too bad.
Yeah, I maybe just because my expectations were kind of, it's hard to go from living in one character's mind to then living in another character's mind with a lot of books. So, yeah, I think that's part of it. But yeah. No, I'm glad I'm reading again. So thanks for the recommendations.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as recently as this morning, my kid has started playing Overwatch because I started playing Overwatch again.
Is it that recent? I thought this was like an ongoing thing in this household.
No. So Summer and I just had our birthdays. My birthday was on the 6th and Summer's birthday was on the 10th. And on Summer's birthday, Summer is super into Overwatch right now and is one of my best friends in the whole world. And so I said, all right, Summer, I haven't played Overwatch in years, but I will download it for you so that we can play together. And unfortunately, it's very fun. And they've Fortnite-ified it, right? So when you open it up, there's all these little blips of like, oh, the battle pass, and look at your dailies, and oh, have you seen all of these characters? And like, there's just blips everywhere because it, you know, you play a game and the second the game is done, it's like, oh, and look, because you played that character, you leveled up the character, and also your battle pass, and also your dailies, and so I've been playing a lot of Overwatch, and
it's
really fun because it's a weird, like, it's the bicycle of hero shooters, and I don't mean that in a sexual way. I mean it in a, like,
I did not think it in a sexual way. I don't even know what that means in a sexual way.
it's been so many years since I've played it, and yet I immediately riding a bike. I immediately fell back into it so easily. And it feels like a lot of people have suddenly started playing Overwatch again. And I don't know if that's because everybody's pissed off at Rivals and is looking for hero shooters to play. And Overwatch, for better or for worse, has been around and weathered through quite a few storms of people not really wanting to play it. That now when you come to play it, you're like, oh, they've added a bunch of shit to this game, yeah. You know?
Yeah, there's so many heroes now. I was kind of shocked to see the roster.
Yeah, I didn't know who half of them were.
Yeah,
so I'm having to learn. But a lot of my friends play support, so I've been playing tank.
I like playing tank.
Yeah, I like tanks. I'm not good with tanks who can't take a bunch of hits, and I know in general that's like what tanks are for. Right. But like some of them require a bit more finesse.
Uh huh.
If I want to play a thing that's like a true really tank. Hard to kill. Yeah. Where it's like you have a shield and you can heal easily and you just eat shit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
If it requires more thinking than that, I'm probably not going to do very well with it.
Yeah. So. The character complexity is kind of all over the place, right? Like there's some that are super straightforward and then others that require, like, it feels like a calculator to like, understand all the different ways to effectively play it and help your team.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really think of Jetpack Cat. I don't know anything about Jetpack Cat, but I was watching your daughter play it and learn it, and it looked hard. It looked really hard with the way you had to like position and then think about how your movement will affect the people around you. And
yeah.
So
Yeah, Summer was teaching me. I said that I was curious how Jetpack Cat worked, because when you talk about that character with people who play the game, they're like, okay, as long as the cat's on my team, it's the best cat in the world. Love that cat. But if the cat's on the other team, I want it to die. I hate that cat so much. It's the worst cat that's ever lived. And Summer said that as a rule, they will not play the cat because it creates such a toxic environment because people hate the cat so much. Yeah.
Oh no.
Because and of course immediately followed up by showing me all of the like fucked up stuff you can do with the cat because one of its major abilities is picking people up.
Yeah.
So basically you have a dive and like a levitate. So what a bunch of people will do is they'll just dive at somebody, pick them up, and just drop them off the side of the map.
Yeah.
It's fucked up. It's that fucked works. Up and really easy to do. The cat is the only character that can properly just fly. You can literally fly all over the map. It's not a glide. There's no timer on it. You just fly. And then That's you great. Dive and you grab people and you chuck them off the map. It's a That's mess. Great.
I mean, I got to respect Overwatch for having like the guts to make a character that like game breaking in its like identity, yeah. Because I had kind of assumed everything was kind of the same ish in a game like that, but
yeah,
I think learning that I keep wanting to call it Keyboard Cat because that's what I grew up with, but Jetpack Cat,
Jetpack Cat,
that's impressive.
Yeah, I haven't played the game long enough or like recently enough to know what the counter to that would even be. Because when I was doing it, I was like, this would make me so angry.
It seemed like it had little,
would make
like,
me so angry.
Like it didn't have much life. So I bet it's just like, you got to snipe it quick.
Yeah. If you can hit it, maybe you're fine. Yeah. But it's always hard to hit things that fly.
Yeah.
It's the problem.
And are small like a cat.
Yeah. but yeah, my kid is left-handed. So she tends to struggle with like mouse movement. So a lot of games that she's been interested in playing that have required like WASD movement and the mouse, she's really struggled with. But I think because she likes how the characters look in this game enough. Yeah. And also there's like no blood in it, you know, nothing that freaks her out.
Yeah.
So, it's felt like she can, I showed her how to hop into AI games, just games with bots. And she really enjoys just picking a random character and just going into a bot game. And she's been doing okay learning. We were talking this morning, you and I, about how interesting it is to watch a kid like slowly learn how to do something that you've been doing for years, because we don't even think about it anymore. It's just muscle memory, you know, but like watching her be like, and now I right click and then I walk forward, you know, like
it is awesome. Like, to see in real time those synapses firing, and then like a new brain connection is made, and suddenly it's like, oh, I can back up while shooting instead of running forward and shooting. And now they can't get me because I'm going the other way. I don't think she's made that realization yet. That was probably ahead of time. But, you know, yeah, it's been cool to see her try different characters and can right away be like, this one's not for me. It just like swaps right away. It's like, yep, that's how I am. I can tell right away.
Yeah, totally. Exactly. That's what's nice. But yeah, it's been really fun to play again, which surprised me. I thought I was going to play a couple games and then be like, all right, cool. I did. Occasionally, I get roped into playing WoW again, and it's only ever for a day. You know, it's like so-and-so really wants to play. I said I'd play with them. I'll re-download it. I play WoW, and then I'm like, and now that my social contract is over, I will uninstall this game immediately. I've just never, I was really into it, into classic WoW when I was in college. And then I never played it beyond that, only like in snippets. So.
Yeah, I only really come back for the new expansions. And then we play for like a month.
Right.
And then we all duck out at the same time. And each time I'm like, maybe this time I'll stick around a little bit longer, but it's just, it feels like a chore at some point. And I will say I have enjoyed tanking in those. Like if you get like a little group doing dungeons and stuff, it is nice to have everyone kind of following a role. I think that they've gotten pretty good with like the gameplay loop in retail WoW. But it's a tough game to keep on. I feel like maybe just because we're older and
maybe
I'm trying to understand where my tastes have changed or how they've been changing, but they absolutely have. And I don't know like if it's an age thing.
Did you used to just like love MMOs, like the format of MMOs, or is that what you
mean? I could play things for a much longer amount of time. Like I would just hop on after stream or something like that and play for a few hours. And now I can't really do that as much. Like I only really got like an hour or two in me if I'm ever gonna play anything off stream. And I don't know, it makes me sad. It's like it was such a consistent hobby that I could always count on. And then at some point it's just kind of become more of a chore. So
that's how I feel about JRPGs. I used to love JRPGs. I could just sit for hours and play them. And at a certain point I had to accept that I didn't enjoy them the same way anymore. That I don't have the like, I'm not able to get invested and enjoy spending a lot of time with them. I can enjoy them for like small snippets, but then it takes a million years to even get through it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's the same where thinking that to myself makes me sad, because as a kid, that's all that I wanted to play was like big, cool RPGs, you know? So it's weird to, as an adult, be like, I just can't get invested in them anymore.
Yeah. Maybe it's the stories, maybe. Like, the very few stories I feel like I want to see through.
Yeah.
Maybe because we've like seen so many at this point that if we feel like you said before, like if you feel tingles of something coming that you've seen before that feels redundant or too self-aware, then you're like, I know where this is going. I can fill in the
Never
blanks.
Mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked Endocopia. That was one that recently I did actually finish.
Oh, yeah, you said that was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one. Pitch that.
Okay, Endocopia. It is a creepy, cool, funny, point and click adventure game that's stylized kind of like the old, you know, early 2000s or even earlier, like edutainment games, where you are kind of helping this childlike character explore this kind of surreal and fantastical world by pointing and clicking on stuff, and everything does something. But then there's also like horror in it. You know, there's like body horror. There's supernatural kind of freaky characters. You know, even some jump scare stuff.
Right.
All based around this kind of fantastical world and characters that are all written to be really entertaining and fun. It kind of reminds me of Undertale in some ways, and just kind of the writing and the, you know, oh, you've fallen into this this realm of characters that are beyond any rational thinking.
Right.
but in like spending time with them, they become your new like kind of found family is like definitely one of the themes. So it has a lot of those same kind of energy of Undertale, but I think more concise. It's like shorter than Undertale and feels like it's more of a like there was a lot of effort into making these different zones that all have their own kind of tone and their own kind of messaging. And when you complete each of those zones, it kind of progresses the story a little bit each time until you get to the end.
Gotcha.
But it's fun. It's cute. And I finished it in a stream and a half. So like
not super long either.
Yeah, it's pretty short, but it's got, you know, good puzzles and great music. I've been listening to music off like on SoundCloud and
that's
Spotify.
The best feeling finishing a game and being like, man, I loved that music.
Yeah, it's great. It's like a way of staying in the world a little bit longer after it's over. So yeah, I recommend it for sure. I think you would love it.
It sounds like my kind of game.
Yeah,
I do keep looking at it and seeing how much everybody loves it. So clearly,
what are your reservations? Good. You seem like you have reservations.
Because those games also require games that have that vibe tend to also require a certain amount of emotional investment. And sometimes I'm not in the right headspace for that.
Yeah.
You know,
that's totally fair. I feel like it's harder and harder for games to get me to emotionally get invested. As well. This one I did end up getting there, I think, just because the story was not very, it's not like, It's much more show and not tell. It's just got like a lot of fun interactions with the characters and kind of this mystery of who you are that you're kind of piecing together. But it's not done in a way that is you even have to know by the end. You can finish the game and like not have figured out or cared about any of that, and it's still fine. Yeah, it's more like the journey is the emotional attachment rather than the destination, I'd say.
Right. You can think about that stuff and pursue that stuff, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. Maybe I'll play that next week.
All right.
Maybe I'll finally do that.
Yeah.
The other thing that I played this week was the new Rusty Lake game. I can't remember. Do you play the Rusty Lake games when they come out?
No. I don't know what that is.
None of them?
Mm-mm.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Whoa. Hold on. So the Rusty Lake games, they're a series of games. They started as flash games. I think you would love these games. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah, they're all pretty short. None of them are like significantly long, but they all take place in or have to do with a place called Rusty Lake. It's like a lake in a weird valley in a nondescript place where strange things are always happening, revolving specifically around certain families. So the games come out not in like chronological order. They just sort of fill in small gaps. So like this game, Servant of the Lake, takes place before a lot of the games that have come out. But it fills in some information about like who some people are or things that happened. These games are also the sort of games where you can play them and just be like, that was fucking weird. They're all very strange. They employ a lot of like strange visuals. It's all point and click puzzles. yeah, when you're playing them, you'll be like, oh, we've met that person before, or, oh, I think I know who that is, you know, and you can piece things together and puzzle out like who people are, what's going on, et cetera, et cetera. But there's so many of them at this point, and they all just kind of tell like small specific stories inside of the world, basically. So,
cool.
Yeah. So this one is called Servant of the Lake. And the concept of it is you have been hired to come and work at a manor house next to the lake only for the weekend. The family, the Vanderbooms, for anybody who has played the games, the Vanderbooms are having a family reunion. The oldest brother of three kids has been tasked by his mother after passing that he has to be the one to make sure that every year they still have a family reunion. You show up and everybody is saying a bunch of really cryptic shit like, well, sometimes, you know, servants go missing, but hopefully you'll make it through the weekend, you know, things like that where you're like, why would I stay here? What is a why? Yeah. I would leave, you know, but generally you're just being told there's going to be a family reunion. You're working for Aldous Vanderboom. He is very particular and weird. He has a maid that works there named Kate, and she's seems to have been there for a long time. And she's very normal. She's very just like, these people are crazy. They're just rich, crazy people. Just like, keep your head down, do your job, and then it'll all be fine, you know. But of course, the guests show up and a bunch of weird shit happens. Yeah. Yeah. So this one, to be as spoiler-free as possible, what's cool is all of the games up till now have been sort of like HUD light, I guess I would say. They're point and click puzzle games. You normally have kind of like a little thing that pops up if you're holding on to something. But generally, there isn't really a lot to interact with or, you know, anything that's like keeping track of stuff. But this game chooses to be much more kind of like a typical point and click puzzle game. It gives you a note, like a book in game where they're like, you're a servant here and there's a lot of things you need to keep track of. So here's a book, and the book keeps track of everything that you're asked to do. But everything that you're asked to do is sort of split up into the chapters of the game. And then it also gives you a place where you can take notes. I didn't wind up using it except to draw myself with a huge brain. And then I wrote E equals MC squared on the on the page, and that's really it.
Yeah, and so if your character dies and someone finds that, they're going to know that you were like...
They're going to know my brain was huge. Yeah. That's so cool. But yeah, it felt very... The other games, I guess, like, it was never a problem. Because, again, they're just point and clicks, and you pick stuff up, you use stuff, you move on. But this one did feel like it was trying to lean more into being kind of like a crispier game, I guess, you know, a more like put together clear game, because it also keeps track of like each level. And this isn't a spoiler, this is like clear when you get the book, but like each level has its own achievement to try and find, and some of them are like really weird, but the game lets you use the book to like go back and retry sections of the game if you want.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's cool. And it did a lot more than I thought that it was going to do. It wound up being longer than I thought it was going to be. So I enjoyed it.
Nice. Yeah, I like games that are part of a cohesive universe. And you feel like you're kind of peeling the layers back with each one. So that does sound like a thing I'd like.
The first one that I played, which made me want to play all of them, so I would say I think that it's a good one to start with, is Rusty Lake Hotel. I think if you sit down and play Rusty Lake Hotel and you're like, that was so weird and there's so many of these games, I have to know what the rest are like, then it'll tell you if they're your type of game or not.
Yeah, got it.
So that's the one that I would recommend if you're going in totally blind and you've never played them before.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just weird little point and click puzzle games. They're fun.
I mean, after Indicopia, I feel like I want to play more point and click games. They definitely were. It reminded so many it reminded me of like my childhood growing up with edutainment games. So I'm back on that grind.
Yeah, on the edutainment grind.
On the edutainment grind.
Did you ever have a game that you played when you were a kid and you just haven't been able to find it? Or like, or you don't remember what it was called?
It's a great question. Definitely, but I feel like I wouldn't even remember how to describe it. It's like one of those things that I'd have to see again and be like, that was it. That was the one.
Yeah.
I managed to find most of the ones that were like really influential for me growing up. Like Zumbinis.
What's was that? Big.
Zoom, you never heard of Zumbinis?
No.
Okay. I may have found something that takes precedent over Endocopia. Zumbinis. Oh, man. You should get your daughter to play Zumbinis. What is it? It's okay. It's a game where you are basically playing God for these creatures that are like little nuggets, like little blue nuggets. Think like Mr. Potato Head, where you can swap out their feet, their eyes, their nose, their hair. And so there's like a limited amount, but a ton of different combinations to get them all just the right, you know, combination. You're going to end up having a ton of different variety of like different nose colors, different eyes, different, you know, glasses, different hair, whatever. But they're all in these like little Mr. Potato Head blue nuggets. And they all arrive on a ship. And it's like in lore, they're escaping their like prison and they're trying to find their homeland of like Zumbiniville or whatever. And it's up to you to like get them there. Like they're entrusting their lives to you.
Oh, my gosh. This looks very cute.
Every frame is you get to a new puzzle, and that puzzle has you basically using the combination of their different qualities, their traits, like their nose colors, their eyes, their hair,
to
solve a puzzle. So you have to be like, okay, I can have yellow nose next to red nose, but not next to blue nose. And then you have to like use that to puzzle out how you're going to arrange them all so they can all exit the frame together. But inevitably, you're going to make mistakes, or you're going to, you know, something will go wrong and you're going to end up having them like left behind, or worse, they die.
No!
And so there's like these moments where you're seeing your Zumbini like get left behind as they all travel away, or they get like dropped.
Can you
down
redo it?
You're not. I mean, maybe technically you could redo it, but you're more incentivized just to keep going because the game expects you to keep losing
them. My kid cannot play this game. Can I tell you a story?
Okay.
Just really quickly, just to give you an idea of how attached my kid gets to like, okay. So, she was playing The Sims. I had downloaded The Sims because she was curious about it. We had watched a couple of videos of people making like cute houses in The Sims. And I was like, oh, well, Sims 4 is free now, so we could just download it and you could like see if you like it. Okay. So she bought a stuffed teddy bear for one of her Sims and then realized, oh, no, I didn't want to put the stuffed teddy bear there. Accidentally deleted it and had a full-on meltdown because she was like, that was my Sims teddy, and I deleted it. And has not played The Sims since then.
Because
she was so upset about it.
Okay, maybe
so
you're right. Maybe
I don't think she can play. If you are encouraged to just move on, even if you've like left behind one of your Zumbinis, I don't think she could play it.
I mean, I think she'll get so upset. I think it was a lesson in loss for me. I remember like when I lost them, because I was devastated too. I was like,
yeah,
I failed them as their guardian. I failed the Zumbinis.
Yeah.
But then you get to the very end and you like see them get to their home and then like they start spreading out and it shows how many Zumbinis have made it. And you're right away like, I got to get more. So you go all the way back to the beginning. And you go through the entire game again to like escort another wave of them in.
Right.
And it's still fun, honestly, to play today. Like the puzzles are great. They've got like voiced characters and like crazy music. And it's it's just a, it was a surreal and kind of beautiful experience. So yeah, I rate Zumbinis very highly.
Okay, good to know. There's a game that I played when I was a kid, and I do not remember what it was called. So if this rings true to anyone, it was an old floppy disk game. And it was a game where you were a science superhero. It was a point and click puzzle game where you had to figure out a science puzzle in order to progress. But the goof was like a little Inspector Gadgety, like the superhero was an idiot, but you, the player, were smart. So when you would solve a thing, he'd be like, ha ha, of course, because I'm so brilliant. Right. But like,
yeah,
it wasn't him. It was you. Hyperman. Yeah. Let's see. Hold on.
Hyperman.
Oh, my God. If you got it. Oh my God, it is Hyperman!
Wow.
That was crazy. You got it in one. Hyperman, that's the game. Oh my gosh.
Are you going to revisit Hyperman?
I might need to play Hyperman.
I
might need
awesome.
To play Hyperman.
Being able to revisit a game from your childhood and like, even if it's like just for a moment, getting like that moment where you can see it from the same eyes you had back then is, I think, absolutely worth it. It's a beautiful thing.
So, yeah.
I think it's worth trying.
But I am worried about the experience of going back to play a game that I remember fondly and being like, oh no, this is bad, actually.
Yeah.
But maybe the nostalgia stays. Maybe that's just separate.
It just leave it encased in amber.
But
it's probably good.
With this, I do want to play this. You know why? Because I never beat it.
Yes.
So I need to play it.
For me, it was Donkey Kong 64. That game was like my childhood, and I never beat it. And so on stream, I like streamed myself getting to the end and beating it. And the ending was so hard and took me so long. I was crashing out. I was having the worst time ever. But when I finally beat it, this like rush, I feel like I could see my like childhood self in the clouds looking down and being like, you did it. Like,
you're doing
it. We finally did it. So that was
cute.
That was worth it.
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
I can't think of any others.
I haven't played anything else this week, I don't think. Or read anything else this week, or we're coming up on I guess not the end of summer break, but like we've got a couple weeks left here.
Yeah.
So it's just been a lot of Animal Crossing, really. Although she did say this morning, essentially her version of Animal Crossing is out, Overwatch is in. She was like,
really?
Mommy, can you? Yeah. She was like, Mommy, can you believe like a couple of days ago, Animal Crossing was my favorite game and now Overwatch is my favorite game ever?
Oh my God. Things move so fast.
I know. I was like, well, they're very different games. So
you can have more than one favorite.
Yeah. There will potentially be times where you're like, you know what? Overwatch is too stressful and I just want to chill out and talk to my villagers, you know?
Yeah.
But who knows, you know, with her dad, maybe she'll get addicted to the pain of competitive multiplayer games.
Oh, that's a tough thing to.
It's too early for her. She can't get into that now.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, baby plays League. The worst.
No.
No. The voice crack. No, please.
No.
Not like this. Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, I wrote down some news.
Oh, great.
I wrote down some news, and because the last couple of weeks, whenever Jesse has talked about the news, I've been like, and it's all going to be good news this week, right? And it never is. And so I was challenged to find entirely good things to talk about for the news today. So we're going to do our best here.
This is exciting. Yeah, I like the news.
I know. So for any of you who are super into Kingdom Hearts and have been excited about Kingdom Hearts 4, they had the like Disney Expo. And they were talking about Kingdom Hearts 4. They were talking about its release, saying that it's going to be coming out late 2027. And Tetsuya Nomura promised that it would not be delayed. He said that he's been seeing a lot of concern or kind of like sort of wishy-washy, like, yeah, they said it's going to come out then, but it's probably not, right? It's probably going to get pushed. So the quote is, we announced the game is going to be coming late 2027. I saw online some people were saying, oh, you know, the actual release date might still get pushed back, but I want to set the record straight. That is not happening. I do hope people do look forward to the game coming in 2027. A lot of the marketing for the game has only just begun. I do hope people are looking forward to hearing more news. So that's pretty like a boot in the sand. Like, no. It's coming out then, right? But also, at the end there, sort of saying, also, we plan on keeping you guys informed. You're going to see a lot of information as we come up to release. So, fingers crossed that that is the case. For the people who haven't played the Kingdom Hearts games, they are a buck wild experience. Any of you who are planning on trying to play through all of them before 4 comes out, God bless. Have a blast. But Nomura was the director of all of them. So.
I didn't realize that it's the same guy for all of them.
Same person.
Wow.
Did all of them. Yeah. It's wild. So, yeah, that's if you're somebody who's been looking forward to Kingdom Hearts 4. That's some good news. Compulsion Games is one of the 5 studios that Microsoft got rid of. But as some of you guys might know, Compulsion Games and Double Fine were the 2 companies who, when all of that was going down, negotiated that they would be able to just like go their own way, take their IPs, right? Like not leave a bunch of stuff with Microsoft to die, essentially. So people were noticing that South of Midnight, which is their most recent game, that is apparently fantastic. I haven't played it. But it's now listed as being self-published by Compulsion Games.
Oh.
And yeah, so they were able to change that in the listings for the game to now being a self-published game. They've come out and said, we want to make more projects. You know, we're feeling good. We're on our feet. We want to do our next thing. We want to work with people, which is great. Yeah, they announced they're seeking.
What are the games that they do?
Compulsion. So they did Contrast and We Happy Few.
That's what I thought.
Yes.
Yeah.
And South of Midnight was their most recent one.
Okay, cool.
Was great, but most people I think just didn't play. I don't think it was panned necessarily. I just think a lot of people didn't play it. But everyone who did said it was really, really good. And I loved Contrast. We Happy Few, I think, was the only sort of, not necessarily stinker, but like that game came out and it wasn't what people wanted
it to be,
right?
My expectations were way too high.
Yeah. but they, you know, they managed to walk away, keep all of their shit.
That's great. Yeah.
And are looking to
new precedent too for other companies.
Yeah. So hopefully Double Fine will also be able to do the same. But yeah, South of Midnight, if you guys want to support them as they're trying to like get back into doing their thing, both South of Midnight and Contrast I loved, and South of Midnight is apparently very fun. Okay, so Steam has a thing that they do occasionally called a free-to-keep game.
Yeah.
So normally people have to sort of troll around in order to figure out what the next free-to-keep game is going to be, but the next one that's going to be coming out on August 24th was revealed by the actual dev, Yanako RPGs. Any of you guys who have wanted to play Dokimon or Doki Monsters Quest, it's a huge like Evangelion inspired monster game that's apparently super cool and has a decent amount of content. It's pretty long, so you'll be able to get that for free on August 24th. Yanako RPGs said that the second that it's free, they'll be posting about it. So if you want to follow them and find out when that game is going to be coming out, they also reposted their trailer in anticipation for it for anybody who wants to go and watch the trailer. But yeah, you could wishlist it and wind up getting a free game on August 24th, which is pretty cool. And lastly, because the last couple of weeks, I've been talking about ways to not doom scroll and to take a moment to yourself, a screen-free moment, if you will. A dev has developed a Chrome extension that is called Cat Gatekeeper. And at certain intervals, a gigantic cat will just come and sit on your screen and block whatever you're trying to do. And
wow.
make you take a 5-minute break.
That's powerful.
Which is great. I love it. I would love more things like that. People were saying stuff like it would be really funny if you were like screen sharing, like doing work and like trying to like actually trying to get something done, and this gigantic cat just like shows up.
Yeah, like the middle of a pitch and you're like sharing the screen and showing
something. But I want that on my phone. I think that would be great if I was on my phone and occasionally something just came in and was like,
you're done.
No, like a cute thing, you know?
You're trying to like call an Uber and the cat comes in. You're like, well, I can show 5 minutes late.
Yeah, exactly. But that's it. That's it for the news. And of course, there was a bunch of negative stuff. But whatever, we can cover that next week.
Yeah,
we don't need to talk about all the negative stuff because there was plenty. Okay, but I was given a task. I was given a task, so we got some good news this week. And releases. We've got Star Wars Zero Company coming out. That's the Star Wars XCOM game. I think you and Sam were talking about that game, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to play it. I'm like literally setting up on my cousin's computer so I can stream it before I go away to France, because I really want to play that.
Amazing.
Yeah, it looks like it's XCOM, but Star Wars. They've done a bunch of like lore stuff to try to make it customizable, but also accurate within like the kind of time period that it would have been set in the story. So I think it's got the potential to be really cool. A lot of us have been wanting their XCOM like game for so long, but they've never been quite right. XCOM has just been too hard to unseat as the game of that genre. So
did you not saying that this is necessarily exactly like XCOM, but did you play Tactical Breach Wizards?
No, I've never heard of that.
Oh my god, you should play that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
is it a wizard it's like, XCOM?
It's a really funny tactics game, yeah, where it's like a magical shooter. And everybody's a different type of wizard, and they're all really funny. It's really good.
Oh, that does sound right up my alley.
Yeah, Tactical Breach Wizards.
Tactical. I'm writing it down.
It's very good, and it was really fun. And I think, as somebody who finds XCOM really frustrating, I think it was really accessible as well. So if you're like a hardcore XCOM like tactic strategy game player, maybe you wouldn't find it as interesting, but you will definitely still find it funny because it's a very funny game. We've also got Ultra Pool, which is a billiards roguelike game. It's Ooh. Another in kind of a series of games that are like, what's a gambling game or sort of like a pub game where we can take all of the elements and make it so that there's like a randomized aspect to that. So with this, all of the balls can have like different aspects to them and behave differently depending on what order they all hit each other and things like that. So that looks very cute.
That sounds satisfying, yeah.
Yeah. Brush Hammer is coming out, which is a miniature painting game if you wanted something chill Ooh. To play. The Cabin is an adventure horror VR game that takes place in a cabin. Once Human is a survival MMO game. We have
this is
Lorne.
Their console release.
It's a console release, the Once Human one. Yes, that's right. It's Xbox and PlayStation.
Yeah, it's been out on Steam for a long time, but this is their console. Yeah.
Gotcha. Lorne is coming out. That's an action RPG. We've got the Aliens Fireteam Elite 2 game coming out.
Oh, yeah.
The online multiplayer game, the shooter.
Huh.
I don't know if it's not instanced. What's the word that I'm looking for? Like a Left 4 Dead.
Oh,
where you like have like a level to play. I don't know if it's that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I assume it is.
I think so. Let me look it up. Here. Yeah, I'll look it up while you continue.
Yeah, yeah, no problem. The last game to bring up, if you like your anime strategy games, is Brigandine Abyss. So those are the major releases that I saw. But of course, if you're watching the VOD and you want to recommend a game that you know is coming out in the next week that we didn't mention, feel free to throw it in the comment section.
I think it is. I think you're right. I think it is like a four-person co-op fighting against enemies and getting through a level and fight through an enemy sort of thing. So, yeah, that sounds cool. I might try that.
Yeah. There's so many games that come out every week now.
Yeah. I know it's even going to get more and more over the course of September, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, why is that? Why are there specific months that like a lot of games come out? Do you know?
It's definitely got something to do with the quarters, like Q3, Q4, I feel like have some of the most big pushes for like consumer products to come out. Q4, of course, because of like the holidays, but I think Q3, maybe it's like weather also dependent, like people, you know, as it's getting like cooler or like going out less and
right, they'll have more time indoors.
Yeah, but I do feel like it is, I feel like March and April, there's usually like a kind of a big release push, and then it's a dry period through most of the summer, and then it's like September, October, November, December is kind of the big sprint at the end. But I don't know. It's probably also companies that just want big returns in the Q3 and Q4 for like their stock reasons.
Right.
But yeah, I don't have the details. That's all speculation.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just curious if you had insight on that, but that makes sense to me. Fantastic. I'm gonna let you go to sleep if you need a nap. So let's
thank you. That's right. I am a little sleepy.
Because jet lag is so rude. But please tell everybody how they can find you. If they're like, I love this boy, how do I see more of him?
Boy. Where do the I sleepy see more boy. Of the sleepy boy?
Yeah. Where do I find him? What's he doing?
I'm usually streaming when I'm not sleeping or traveling. you can find me at twitch.tv/Kriken. I also have a YouTube channel called Kriken 2. And a VOD channel called Kraken's Catalog. So those are the three places to see the sleepy boy. But thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to come on and talk about fun stuff. So
of course. You and Sam are going to be streaming together after this,
yes.
Right?
Later tonight, Sam and I are going to be playing Choicer Voicer, which is...
Oh.
Yeah, it's a game where we're going to be taking turns dubbing over clips from TV and movies and trying to do our best impressions of things. So I'm like, I need to be awake Beautiful. Enough that I can do a good impression. So I'm like,
go nap, go nap, go nap. Okay. Amazing. Well, yeah, let's see. For me, I don't know, man. I've been talking about playing Mina the Hollower. I might play Endocopia. You know, who knows?
Zumbinis.
I might play Zumbinis.
Maybe.
I might sit with my kid and play Zumbinis. Who knows?
Yeah, just don't lose any of them. Make sure she
But
knows
if
not
we
possible.
Lose any of them, yeah. It will ruin the night, is the problem. Somebody in chat was like, right, but maybe that would be good, like, growth.
Yeah.
You know, maybe maybe it would maybe it would help her grow. Bro, I don't need to be doing all that.
There's some of those core memories that, like, you'll look back on and be like, yeah, I remember when I lost that little blue freak and I ruined my month and I never wanted to play video games again. Like, you know.
Dude. Some kids are just really sensitive, and that's okay.
As a sensitive kid, I get it. I absolutely get it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hyperman. I might play Hyperman next week and read some books. Guys, go read a book. But hey, if you enjoyed Geekenders this week, thank you so much for watching. Shout out to Jesse and all of them who are in Chicago right now. I hope their show goes fantastic. Yeah, all of the previous VODs for Geekenders are on youtube.com/JesseCox. So that's where you can watch it. We're also on all the podcasting apps and sites. However you would like to engage and watch the show helps us out a ton. So thank you all so much. But otherwise, we hope you have an amazing weekend and week, and we'll see you next time. So bye-bye. Gotta wave.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, you know what time it is. It's time for the Geekenders podcast. Mega Ran, Jesse and Dodger, what up? Let's go.
Yo, it's the weekend.
Yeah, it's time to geek out.
Let it begin.
Go on stream and shout. It's Jesse and Dodger, so give them a follow and see what the Geekenders are all about.
Yo, it's the weekend.
Yeah, it's time to geek out.
Let it begin.
Go on stream and shout. It's Jesse and Dodger, so give them a follow. Number one geek podcast without a doubt. Yo, another end of another long week. Got a job and a kid, I know that you're all beat. So take a second, grab a drink and vibe while we catch you up in just a matter of time. On gaming, comics, whatever you're doing. If you're nerdy like us, then you know you should tune in. Thank you for sharing our world with us. Now follow, subscribe, and turn this up.
Yo, it's the weekend.
Yeah, it's time to geek out.
Let it begin.
Go on, scream and shout. It's Jesse and Dodger, so give them a follow. Number one geek podcast without a doubt.
Your vehicle doesn't just get you from here to there. It's a bridge to the people and places that matter most. It's how you show up for your family, your community, and everyone else that depends on you. That's why for 125 years, Firestone has been building tires with one thing in mind: to deliver products that are as reliable as you are. Firestone, always dependable since 1900.
Looking for your next thrifting experience? Check out the new Goodwill Columbus location in Westerville. Our new store is full of the latest secondhand selections with options rotating daily. From warm weather clothes to home decor, you may find your new favorite items just in time for spring. Each purchase helps us create opportunities throughout Central Ohio. It's shopping that looks good, feels good, and does good. Come shop at 60 East Schrock Road or learn more at goodwillcolumbus.org.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail.
Woo!
And the super athlete-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps.
You got this.
And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athlete-ish, Sierra's got it.